The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Good afternoon. Open line on the Man in Line today through till 1 o'clock. So call 66 13 68, text or WhatsApp 166 177, email studio at manxradio.com. And just a quick word, the podcast from Man in Line is listened to all over the world at all times of day or night. So if you're listening to the podcast right now, remember the answer phone is always on 682-604. 682-604. Of course, 01624 if you're outside the Isle of Man. Love to hear from you. And we get many comments from all around the world about things that happen on the Isle of Man. Lots of comments regarding the vet bills, which we didn't get to yesterday. It was a busy show yesterday, so I'll get to some of those. On the way to work this morning, this is yesterday morning, I encountered a man running towards Ramsey on the mountain road on a blind corner, 3 feet inside the road. I sounded my horn to alert him to the immediate danger. What's going on? His actions, running across the mountain road towards Ramsey, was dangerous. I'm bewildered. Well, he would have been as well. Do you see many people jogging or running on the mountain road? I suppose you're technically you're allowed to, but I mean, is it safe? There's certainly no pavements. A message in that just also says, blue badges aren't given out easily. I look normal. We were talking about misuse of disabled parking spaces. I look normal. But I have a multi-system injury that can affect me daily very differently. The amount of grief and abuse that I have been given at times is horrendous. It's common, isn't it? You'll see somebody with a blue badge, or perhaps not showing a blue badge, who parks in a disabled space that doesn't look disabled. I don't want to generalise, but you know what I'm saying. They don't have any visible disability. But then again, not all disabilities are visible. However, and we mentioned it yesterday with Mark, can you remember the last time anybody was nicked for parking in a disabled space? I'd be really interested to know the last time anybody was pinched for parking in a disabled space or blocking a disabled space, parking in a disabled space without a blue badge, or blocking a disabled space. Some people simply don't respect disabled parking spaces. So if you don't respect them, what's the point of having the darn things? If nobody's going to get nicked for abusing a disabled parking space, what's the point of having them there in the first place? Any thoughts on this? By all means, do text, email, call and WhatsApp. Let's get to the phones first of all. Oh, Julian's on now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. How are you doing?
Very well today. What a lovely day.
Yeah, nice, isn't it? Enjoy it while it lasts, the weekend or something.
Yes.
I heard yesterday, I think it was, the Department of Education head, MHK, Daphne Kane, talking about putting sound dampening panels made from recyclable wind turbine
in the
components.
Villa Marina, yes.
Yeah. Just kind of interested to get some information from the government, because extremely labour intensive and energy intensive, reckon up to 10 times the energy requirement to reprocess wind turbine blades compared to having a new made for purpose acoustic dampening panel or mat. If they use solvolysis, byproducts are things like CFCs and halons, which from memory are not very good for the environment and the ozone layer. If you're looking at the costings, at least 50% more expensive to use recycled turbine blade materials. Also, because the ones that you buy specially made for purpose are designed and woven to attenuate and to, you've got things like porosity, density, if you use recycled panels, you get what you're given, you know, from these wind turbine blades, and they work out at 32% worse at doing the job than if you'd bought the 10 times less energy requirement to make out of wind panel materials.
Yeah.
And that this is part of the problem, you know, that they're specially optimized to do acoustic damping, you know, so you don't get the echoey effect when you're in the villa and stuff like that. And also, they have to go through special detailed acoustic testing regulations per square meter to make sure they conform to that. But you don't have that with the recycled acoustic panels. You've also got, which is perhaps more worrying, is there's less stringent fire retardant regulations applied to recycled wind turbine blade materials used in stuff like these sound panels that they're putting in at the villa. And this is because it's not the glass fiber, it's the highly inflammable resins that are used to bind the sandwich of materials together when they make the blades, are usually epoxy and polyester. So if you're thinking about those materials, if they were to catch fire, you've got rapid ignition, you've got long flame duration, heavy smoke release. The smoke toxins typically are hydrogen cyanide, nitrogen oxide, methane, ethane, ethylene propane, carbon monoxide, hydrogen, sulfur oxides, formaldehyde, bisphenol A, which is that carcinogenic stuff they put on the edges, benzene, toluene. Now, it's interesting to note that the report that came out of the Sommerland fire about the acrylic paneling Auroglass that was implicated in how the fires were so bad, most of those chemicals were emitted. So when you have the proper acoustic panels, they have to go through a much more stringent manufacturing process to make sure that they don't have those chemicals within them. So it'd be kind of interesting to ask, perhaps, Daphne Kane, what are the specifications and the costs that were related to these panels? Because if they're up to 10 times more energy usage, 50% more expensive, 32% worse at doing the job, and potentially maybe not very good in a fire, there's a few questions on my mind with this.
How did you find all this out, Julian?
This is from MIT, the US Patent Office, Nanjing University Technology Department, Shandong University, Harbin University, Cambridge University. So there's lots of research out on this.
So presumably they've thought all this through.
Well, you know, it's surprising what you can buy in from other countries that might not go through necessarily all the stringent requirements. And you notice a lot of these renewable things, they don't necessarily have to go through the same hurdles. Just look at gas and oil and diesel now. They have to go through all these carbon taxes now that renewables don't. And they've seen, you know, that all the costing of decommissioning of wind farms, what's that going to do to a water table when you've got solar panels with cadmium telluride in them and all this kind of thing? They seem to be kind of ignored. Mm. And I'm just a bit concerned that the stuff that's getting whacked into the Villa Marina, we don't want another Summerland or anything exacerbating the smoke and God knows what coming out of them, because they're burning at high temperatures when they get going. So just like to know that all this has been looked at properly before they've just gone and said, oh, yeah, we'll get some renewable panels in.
Well, I would assume, because you can't move without getting something cleared by an insurance company, so you would assume that all this has been attended to and they're absolutely perfectly safe. We don't quite know how much they cost. As you say, we don't know if they stand up to normal acoustic baffles or what it's all about, but presumably, you know, it's not something they've just pulled off eBay. They'll obviously source it from a reputable supplier, and that'll go. It'll go through all the. It'll go through all the checks and balances, one would assume.
Well, yeah, but you know, best case scenario, it's still only going to be 2/3 of the performance of the proper job. So even if all the other stuff was to check out, you're still getting something that's probably 50% more expensive and 1/3 worse at the job.
Okay. all right.
That's
okay.
Just empirical.
Appreciate it. Have a good weekend. Thanks, Julian.
You too, Andy. Thanks.
Good to hear from you. Vinny dropped a note in and just said, why didn't they do what they did at the old palace ballroom and just put big curtains across? That used to echo, didn't it, a lot. Howard's with us now. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. listen to Julian there. But first of all, what's on your news? And about 2 years ago, we had our great-granddaughter over from the UK, and as inevitable, we were going round the parks, children's playgrounds. And for the short period she was here, we were able to go round, and we never got anywhere near the full amount, 14 children's parks in different parts of the island.
Right.
And they were all in good condition. In fact, the one in Laxey at the time was just being rebuilt, completely rebuilt, the wooden one down in front of the pavilion. And the water park at Nobles Park, the daughter couldn't believe that it was free. I'm not advocating they charge for it, but she said if this was at home and they come from Stoke, there would be an hourly charge. And the water be switched off, and then everybody be back out again, and then, you know, charged to go back in. And she couldn't believe that that water park up at Nobles Park was free. But I can agree with the lady that's on, because in front of our house we have a children's park, and there was no what we term as baby swings. That's the ones built like a box, an open box. And I, well, I was talking to the mothers some a while ago, and they said we want something like that. And I asked the one of the head charangs from the Douglas Corporation Parks Department, oh, no, we can't do that. It's not designed for that. And that was the answer. In other words, mind your own business. And it wasn't long, well, let's say a year, there is a child swing out there now, and all they'd done was took the old one off and put this little child swing on, which makes it doubly safe for babies. And you see mothers and babies out there all the time having their children in the swing, their babies in the swing. But it's down to the apathy, it's lack of enthusiasm on behalf of the people who own these car park, these children's parks. We, you know, they can't be bothered doing it. The ability to put in equipment for this lady's children and other children with disablement is a wrong word, but difficulties.
Yeah.
You know, it's down to the people who design these places, and the ability to put them in is there. The equipment is there for them.
Well, you would assume that, I mean, at the planning stage, surely this will get brought up, Howard.
Well, you'd think so. You know, because, well, I know it's a hell of a long time ago, excuse me, but when we were playing, we had the old witches' hats and everything like this, and the modern equipment now is safety. It's covered in safety. And the likes of what this lady's asking for is not a major, you know, update on anything. The equipment has been designed, not necessarily here, but the equipment from Wixtee, I think, is one of the big companies. They'll all be au fait with this, and they'll have equipment suitable for children. So why is this not, when they put in these parks and renew bits of the parks, why don't they put in pieces that are suitable for children with difficulties?
Hmm.
You know? So that's all it was. But there's no shortage of children's parks on the island, and good ones for children that can play without having to have assistance. There's no shortage of them on the island. We are blessed with them. So let the councils, the commissioners, or whoever it is has got these places, stand up, have a look around and see what they've got, instead of just waiting for somebody to come in and say, well, let's stick a park in there. What we're going to have? I don't know. I'll leave it down to you.
Mm.
And that unfortunately, is the attitude, I think, of a lot of the powers that be.
Are you polishing the lenses this weekend, Howard?
I done them last weekend. I'm going up to cut some grass tomorrow. And then I'm on duty on Sunday morning.
Okay. All right.
Hopefully. Just listening to Julian there when he's rattling off all those chemicals, etc. I'm not sure what it was for. Something to do with the Ville Marina. But you may remember when they first put in or advocated putting in the incinerator. As it was then, the uproar against that, opposing that because of the mixture of chemicals and plastics and various other pieces are going to go in there. And they had to go down a long, tortuous road to put various scrubbers in to ensure that these chemicals are not emitted through the through the chimney.
Oh, crikey, Howard, if you could go back, 25-odd years on Man in Line at the time, according to some people, everybody in Paul Rose was going to get cancer.
Yep. And I know down, well, by the Britannia Stadium in Stoke, there's been one down there long before we had ours. And but some of the chemicals that Julian was reeling off there, it sounds like, well, toxic is not the word. And here we are now, 25 years down the line, and the incinerator's taking care of all our rubbish.
Yeah.
And generating electricity.
You bet, and hot water as well. And the thing is, it does, you know, very quiet. It's one of those success stories. It sits there like something from Buck Rogers in the 21st century and does the job all the time. It's funny, nobody seems to notice it anymore, but it's a big thing there.
But I don't know whether they still do it, but I organised many years ago a tour of that place, and it is amazing. They take you right to the top, and then there's a room up there specially designed for this, and explain how it works and what happens to the residue. And then they gradually take you right the way down through to where the burner is and various other parts, and you can look in through a protected light on the door. It mortified me. There was one of these 30-pound gas cylinders in there, actually been dumped, and it was in the burning in the incinerator. And I said to the chap, "What happens to that?" He said, "That'll stay in there now. We actually shut it down and clean it out again."
Crikey.
So it was only metal. It was burning metal. But when you go through there, the metal's separated and comes out the other side and is recycled.
Okay. All right. Howard, thanks for calling today. Have a good weekend now.
And you. Take care.
Good
Bye
to
now.
Hear from you. Vet bills have gone up in the Isle of Man the same way as they have in the UK. Because I understand big conglomerates have been buying up vet surgeries across the country. For them, it's big business, playing on the sentiments of pet owners who now have to pay extortionate bills. This is Denise's words, by the way. We were talking about the fact that vet bills have gone up. I mean, everything goes up in price, not much comes down. But vet bills seem to have shot up over the past 10 years, 5 years or so. And in the UK, there was a report that lots of pet owners, when they get faced with massive bills, are seeking to have their pets put down. And I'm just wondering, they say it's not a problem here. The MSPCA help people. But anyway, Denise goes on, once they have the monopoly, they can ask what they want in pet fees. When I asked my vet over here why the vet bills have shot up so much, I think they've nearly doubled. I was told they're now owned by a company and there's nothing they can do about it. It's a dire situation arising for pet owners when they can no longer have a pet or carry on keeping a pet because of unreasonable vet bills. And I believe that pet insurance has risen quite dramatically too, as they have to keep in line with the rising costs. I can only foresee rescue centres are now going to be inundated with pets needing a home, and the poor animals are only going to suffer, as they won't have many people who can afford to adopt them just because of, guess what, extortionate vet bills caused by greedy businesses. Says Denise. This is why the issue has hit the headlines across the UK. I hope they're looking into it. Did you have any thoughts on this about pet bills? And I've got some more messages to come to, but Howard was talking about the play areas, and it was this new story we've been carrying today. It's basically how accessible the Isle of Man's play areas are for children of all abilities. So children who have disabilities, how are they coped for in play areas? After evidence in the UK suggested some children with disabilities have to travel miles to find a play area that they're able to use. Not many parks have accessible equipment. Is it the only answer?
As a parent of a toddler myself, I've been to my fair share of parks here on the Isle of Man. And it's fair to say that not many of them seem to have equipment that could be used for a child with disabilities. It's something Joe Sale from Peel has also noticed.
For us, I mean, my daughter's 8. There are a few parks. So, for example, the Morag Park in Ramsey has the roundabout that you can wheel a wheelchair onto the plate and then you can spin them round, which is fantastic. My daughter loves that. But it's things that we lack. So, like a seesaw that you can actually wheel a wheelchair onto, a swing. I mean, my daughter loves a swing and we live in Peel. Peel Park doesn't have anything for wheelchair users at all.
Charlotte Leonard is also from Peel and goes to parks all over the island with her 3 children.
I have Beau and Bear, who are 4-year-old twins. Beau has autism and Bear has a developmental delay. And I have a little girl, Belle, and she is about to turn 2. My boys explore the world with their mouth and their hands and their feet, so quite often they don't wear shoes. So it's good to go to places that are like different textures and different smells and sights and sounds. There is some really good parks on the island for that, but there's nothing specifically for SEND children. Children like ours, they need freedom. They need to be able to run and enjoy themselves and let off steam. So it would be brilliant to get a SEND park on the Isle of Man that would be suitable for children with additional needs.
A new report says half of the parents surveyed in the UK believe their child's excluded from play there because of a lack of suitable facilities. Kate Jordanson from Isle of Play have been telling me just how important play is to a child of any ability.
It's a human right, and I think especially for children with additional needs, like, it gives them opportunities to explore their senses in their body as well.
Any thoughts on this matter? What do you think about it? The accessibility of the play areas for children of all abilities. If you are in charge of, if you've got a child with disabilities, where do you go? How do they have fun? And surely there should be something so that those children, anybody with disabilities, don't feel excluded by this. Is it true they're demolishing Fairfield School soon? 521 dropped a note in. Haven't heard that. If anybody can report, then by all means do get in touch. Elizabeth's on now. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hello, Andy. Just a little funny comment. All the furore about the 20-mile-an-hour limit.
Yeah.
And if you go into Bride Village, come up the hill as though you're going towards Ramsey, and at the top of the hill, immediately turn right to go down to the Burma Road. The sign there for speed is 60. 60. I've never known. It's been like that for, well, I'm in Angus for 56 years. It's been like that as long as I can remember.
Okay, and tell me, you do observe the speed limit, I take it?
Oh, I'm afraid I'm of the age I don't drive anymore.
Okay, all right. 60 miles per hour. Well.
Yes, you know, it's all right when you get down onto the Burma Road, but it's quite twisty and turny, and there's farms and everything on your way down, and often lorries with aggregate going up.
My word.
Crazy, isn't it? I wish I'd just get the house in order.
Okay. All right. Good to hear. Have a good weekend, Elizabeth. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I should enjoy it. I'm gardening every day at the moment.
Okay. Thanks then. Bye. Well, I think lots of people are in this weather. Make the most of it. It really is. It's a steamy old day. That prompts me, actually. I got a message in from Hugh yesterday talking about speed limits. And he said, a while ago on Man in Line, didn't you have the Mr. Loophole on Man in Line? We did. Nick Freeman, a UK-based lawyer who's known for specialising in defending traffic and speeding cases for celebrities. He's known as Mr. Loophole. He represented all sorts of David Beckham, Sir Alex Ferguson, all sorts of people. He's actually trademarked the name Mr. Loophole, reflecting his reputation for finding legal loopholes to get clients off speeding or other motoring charges. And this is what he had to say about the proposed speed limit on the Isle of Man. This is Nick Freeman, Mr. Loophole.
It's going to be extremely unpopular with the general motoring public. They will see this as them being used as a cash cow. It does alienate them from the authorities, which is something that the authorities don't want to do anywhere. Probably more so on a small, independent, governed island like the Isle of Man than anywhere else. To me, it's completely pointless. It's counterintuitive. I drive all over the country. I do a massive mileage. And every time I hit a 20 mile an hour, I think you're obsessed with your speedometer. So you're not concentrating on what's happening around you. You're looking at that speedometer all the time, which I think is dangerous. It's carbon neutral. Journey times obviously take about a third of the time longer. Certain people, such as taxi drivers, are going to be very, very frustrated by it. Delivery drivers are going to be very frustrated by it because it's going to hit them hard in the pocket. It's expensive to implement. Wales implemented it, or they did implement it recently, and I think the cost to the economy over a period of time is estimated at being £4.6 billion. It's costly to install, and of course, it then needs policing, and I don't believe that the Isle of Man has the infrastructure that's there, and I don't think from a beauty perspective, they want to litter their roads with cameras, which is unsightly street furniture. I think it's going to do the tourist industry a lot of harm. I know people, I live in Cheshire, and from friends anecdotally and myself, I don't really want to go to Wales anymore because it's just too slow. It's a beautiful place like the Isle of Man, but you don't want to be sitting at 20 miles an hour. Not only is it counterintuitive, but actually modern cars are not designed to go at that speed. You feel when you're traveling at that speed, actually, I might as well get out and walk. And of course, while some may say that's exactly what we're trying to achieve, that certainly doesn't work, and it's a ridiculous idea. Yes, have it on a dynamic place, out on a dynamic basis, in sensible places, but just to introduce it in all residential areas, unnecessary. It's not going to achieve anything any good. It's going to be very unpopular, and I just can't see the point in it, to be quite honest with you. And people are going to have to pay for it, not only in terms of the fines, but they're also going to have to pay for its implementation and policing to make it work.
The public have until this Friday in which to voice their concerns with the government here about this. What should they say?
If anyone says it's road safety, the statistics don't bear that out. What the people in the Isle of Man should do is they should petition the government very hard and say, what is the point in this? Explain on a blanket basis, how is there any merit in this? And how are you going to enforce it? And do you really want to get everyone off the road accumulating 12 points in 3 years because they're not going to be able to argue exceptional hardship? Is that really what the government is about? Or actually, should we stick to our unique heritage, drive sensibly, and trust the public and just have the implementation of sensible speed limits?
That was Nick Freeman, Mr. Loophole, on Manx Radio a couple of weeks ago, just talking about the 20 mile per hour limits that are currently being consulted upon and maybe introduced in the future, but we'll obviously find out. I was talking about that skeleton, the iron skeleton on Duke Street in Douglas that hasn't been built for ages, where the old KFC used to be. And there's just a big skeleton there, a big bird cage. And I was just pondering yesterday whether or not, when the Tavir travel lodge is built on the other side, whether you'll be able to get trucks down there. Dave said apparently you can get big trucks down the side lane by that birdcage. Crikey, I'd like to see what the size of truck you can get down there, because at the back of the shops down there, at the back of Pat a Cake and stuff like that, there's a tiny lane. Anyway, you probably know better than I do, and if that's so, it'd be nice if they're actually going to do something with it. So, Tony B's with us now. Hi, Tony.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well, thanks. Yeah, thanks yourself.
I'm all right, yeah. It's nice and hot, but yeah, to do with some rain occasionally. But what I called for, it's actually nothing to do with anything else that's going on. It's just one I'd like to, well, not throw a grenade in the water. I just want to ask everybody out there, if anybody knows the answer to who owns the copper network and who owns the fibre network. Because Manx Telecom keep advertising that they're going to switch off the copper network, which apparently we don't have a choice about. Now, if they own the copper network, that's fine, but if the government owns it, why has the government suddenly decided we're going to do this without any consultation, as usual? Now, it wouldn't surprise me, because that's what they want. Somebody in somewhere wants, and so they just do what they want. But if you think about it, you're going to turn off something that's worked for years and years and years, and we're going to move over to fibre optic because it's so much better. Now, I not sure it is so much better. I know one thing, it's a lot more expensive. So I suspect that all the costs will go through the roof. And I'm wondering who actually owns that network. Because if it's owned by somebody else or owned by Manx Telecom, they'll probably sell it to somebody who will then make money out of it by putting up the cost of using the network. And I just wonder, would the government be stupid enough to allow Manx Telecom to own that network and be able to sell it? Because if that's the case, we can face increased costs in our network and our cost of phoning, using the internet, etc., 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 because the government has said so.
I'm just wondering. Yeah, it's interesting. And mentioning Manx Telecom, I'm trying to remember who owns Manx Telecom. I think it's a company called Basalt Infrastructure Partners. One of these private equity people.
Well, my question is, who owns the network that they're going to switch off, which is the copper network, and who owns the network that they're going to force us to use? And I just find the whole approach to this is one of, we will do this and you will fall into line, as usual. It's typical Manx government. It sounds very like a Manx government. I haven't thought this through, but I'll do it anyway. And if it is owned by that company, Manx Telecom, what's going to happen to Shure? Because we've got no competition.
Yeah, well, I think, and I'm sure Cura are the people responsible for this, Communications Utilities and Regulatory Authority, but I'm sure... Mm-hmm. I'm sure that Shure, Cable and Wireless, have got access to the network. I'm sure they are allowed equal access to the network, and I think that's enshrined in law.
Well, I would certainly hope so, and I would certainly hope that the controlling of the network is not in private hands, because if that's the case, then you're opening it up to price gouging and just doing what they want when they forced everybody to turn off the copper network. And the other thing is, switching over from one to the other is tremendously expensive. So all the old people who've got telephones will find out they're all junk. They're no use to them anymore because they don't plug in to the fibre network. You can't just plug it back into a different network. I don't know whether you have to have adapters or what, but I guarantee it's going to cost money. It won't be, and it won't be free of charge.
Interesting point. We'll try and find out who.
Well, I'm just thinking about the hundreds of people. Well, yeah, but it's not just that. That's a national asset. So I would hope that it's the government that has ultimate ownership, and it's the government that has ultimate control. I would hope. I'm not very hopeful.
Okay. Right. We'll try and find out. Okay. But,
yeah, it'd be a good thing to know so how much we're going to pay at the end of the day for our telephone in the future, because I don't trust the adverts. And I do know it costs money to switch over, a lot of money. And everything you've got in hand at the moment is rubbish. It's just you can't use it, as far as I know.
Okay.
All right, take care.
Good to hear
from you. Have a good weekend, Andy. Yeah. Have a rest, have a break.
All right, thanks for that. It's 20 to 1 on Manx. Well, it's a long story since the time that Manx Telecom was formed, and it was part of BT at the time, and then became ours. But it then became part of O2, didn't it, when BT Wireless merged or demerged. Telefonica, the Spanish people, bought it in 2006. Then HG Capital bought it, and now it's a company. It was floated on the AIM market, the sub-market of the London Stock Exchange, and then the private equity people, Basalt Investment Partners, have got it now. Quite as to who owns the network, the fibre network, of course, the government's put public money in and paid Manx Telecom to put the fibre network around the Isle of Man. It has said it's the future. It has more capacity than the copper network, although the copper network offered many advantages, not least for anybody who's in the information business, like a radio station, because we couldn't make certain connections in the past. We couldn't do studio links now. It has to be done through different methods. Not entirely straightforward methods, it has to be said. Right, more messages to come to in just a few moments' time on Man in Line.
Hi, Liz. I see you've had your garage converted.
We're desperate for more room.
Yes. Come through and have a look. John called Manx Property Conversions. We now have an extra bedroom, but it could be another reception room, kids' playroom or office. They also did our conservatory roof last year. We were so impressed, we got them back to convert the garage.
Wow, I need that. What's their number again?
Call MPC on 450500. That's 450500. Or find them on Facebook at Manx Property Conversions.
There's never been a better time to buy your new Yamaha. Direct from H&H Motorcycles, South Key Industrial Estate, Douglas, or online at hnhmotorcycles.im. With great deals across the Yamaha range and an exclusive offer to H&H Motorcycles of a contribution to your riding gear. Plus, find many more top brands from RST, RaceFX Enduro and Alpine Stars to Arai, AGV, Motul and more. With island-wide delivery available. See what's in store at hnhmotorcycles.im.
Check out the Groudle Glen Railway summer timetable for some great days out. Visit the Clifftop Tea Rooms and Sales Emporium. Book a special steam tea and join our free family train spotting challenge. Hop on the line that goes uphill to the sea, the Groudle Glen Railway. For times, see ggr.org.uk or visit on Facebook.
The previous message was brought to you by QVH, the island's premier serviced offices and co-working space in the heart of Douglas. Call 639 940 for more information or visit qvhpremieroffice.com.
DOI Minister Michelle Hayward certainly seems in a hurry to get things done and bring about significant change to our lives. With government's record for speed being noteworthy primarily for its absence, you'd imagine the Minister's drive and determination might be welcomed as a breath of fresh air. She's certainly succeeded in dividing public opinion, but is she out of her depth or boldly taking on the controversial issues that others have feared to tackle? Find out on Perspective this Sunday at 12 on Manx Radio with me, Phil Gorn. The caped DOI crusader is certainly making a splash, but will the kryptonite of public opinion finally get to her?
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
17 minutes before one, Robert said, what's happened to the Find My Bus web app? Is it still around, the Find My Bus web app? And Lindsay said, I think, are you referring to ISDN? Because I miss ISDN. Yes, Lindsay, and we miss ISDN at the radio station. It was so much easier. But it's not here anymore. I think we were the first place in the British Isles to lose ISDN. Bring it back. And now let's get to Byron. Hello, Byron.
Yeah, good afternoon to you, Andy. Good to hear you again, of course. Andy, there's always a number of topics, as it were, on Man in Line. That, okay, I think most of us that live here regard the island as a rural idyll, as it were. But there's so many frustrations which, with the way that it's managed, that it appears to be a backwater and it doesn't look as if there's going to be any movement in another direction. We've heard about the 100,000 people, obviously, population, try to attract, you know, so that we can increase the taxes and revenues for the island, etc. But I just want to quote one situation that is really, really, it really frustrates me something chronically. I've got family in Southern Ireland and I've got three grandchildren. Well, they're not grandchildren, actually, 16, 14 and 12. But when it's birthdays, Christmas and other events, and I go, I know what I need to do. I need to put I need to put something together for one of the grandchildren. I'll post it a month early to make sure that it gets there on time. And over a period of 3 years, what happens? Invariably, the item after 3 weeks, gets returned with some sort of customs ticket on it and no explanation, and we try and we speak to the people in the post office in Ramsey who are exceedingly helpful in trying to explain why this happens all the time. And on the last occasion, they suggested to me, well, go down to the sorting office in Ramsey, have a word with the guys there with your last birthday card that you'd sent to Southern Ireland after nearly 3 weeks was returned for no apparent reason on the actual customs label. spoke to a chap there. I won't mention the chap's name in case he doesn't want to be embarrassed. Very, very helpful. He said, don't worry, Byron. He said, I can't see anything wrong with it. He said, what I'll do is I'll take their customs ticket off and I'll redo it and I'll send it off to, we'll send it off for you. I said, great, that's good, that's good. Thanks very much for your help. Here we are 3 weeks down the road again and no sign of it getting there. Now, the thing is, if we're looking to expand business and commerce of the island, our island, that is, the Isle of Man, it occurs to me, and perhaps I'm the only person on the planet, that looks upon Ireland, that includes, as in Southern Ireland and Northern Ireland, it is a gateway to Europe, and it's on our doorstep. Now, I know we've had deputations going to South Africa and Indonesia, I think, at one time, trying to drum up trade for the island, but I'm not aware that we've got perhaps a gateway on our doorstep where sending our good people into either Southern or Northern Ireland and try and ascertain what the opportunities are for trading or bringing business into the island from Europe, which is on our doorstep. I don't know if that's not occurred to anybody or what. But
more to the point, Byron. I mean, so how come something like a humble birthday card keeps bouncing back? What's did they say? Was there any reason whatsoever for it?
On the last item, Andy, there was nothing on it at all. But what the good people at the sorting office in Ramsey spotted was. And I won't detail who made this very, very small mistake. On the declaration, the customs declaration label that the good people in the post office put on, you obviously have to quote what's in it and et cetera, et cetera. On the date, they'd actually put the year as 26. So that was not 25.
Right.
So whether that was some pernickety person somewhere, because the thing is, we don't have the mail plane anymore, but that to one side. Mail, I understand, it's very difficult to ascertain what the route is, but my understanding is it goes to the UK. It goes to some sort of central depot sorting office first. And then it goes to somewhere in Ireland, and then the next stop, and then it moves on from there.
Yeah.
But
I mean, more to the point. Just tell me again. You say how soon can you rely on any sort of post getting to the Republic of Ireland from the Isle of Man? As a rule of thumb, how long does it take?
Well, sorry to say, Andy, you can't rely on it. And the thing is, previously, one Christmas, I'd send a postal tube, you know, and you can buy these things from our local post office, the sort of approved stationery, as it were,
yeah,
which you can use. That was 6 weeks or something, and that came back, and it just sort of says return for, but there's no specific reason, and this is why when I took the birthday cards to the sorting office here and spoke to a chap there, very, very helpful, I said to him, look, this has been returned to me, it's a regular occurrence, can you please explain to me what happened, why? And the guy looked at it for some time and said, no, I can't. Then he started taking the customs label off and said, Byron, I'll readdress it and we will send it from here. And it still hasn't got to destination. One other thing, I mustn't keep you too long. One other thing is that I've got family in Southern Ireland and I was looking at going to stay with them in August. And they're Southern Ireland, so I thought, I've done it once before. I'll take the car to Dublin and then speak into Steam Packet, who in the last TT, I understand that some people have been referring it to as Steam Racket. So that appears to be another sort of shortfall somewhere. But anyway, moving swiftly on. The I just don't understand that. So, looking at trying to get to Ireland in August, the catamaran does one trip per week. It goes out there on a Friday or whatever, comes back on a Friday, and then it doesn't go to the following Friday. Now, okay, somebody can say there isn't the business barren to support that. Yes, but what promotion, what investigations have been made as a business case to see if there could be a greater form of income from that, and where that craft, lovely as it is going to Europe.
Yeah.
And Europe, you know, is a gateway to Europe.
Sure.
All the European countries. But that's my point, Andy.
Okay.
So,
No. It's a very valid point, and certainly with effectively the European community being on our doorstep, and certainly people who would take a car across to Ireland could then drive down to the south of Ireland and get those southern Irish ferries to northern Europe.
Yeah, well, the thing is, there is ferry connections. My understanding, commercial ferry connections in the north of Ireland as well, because I've asked this question of my son that lives there in West Meath in that area, and he said, "No, Dan," he said, there is the trading connections into the north, of course, because it runs as an independent state, as it were, but it is technically connected to Europe.
Yeah.
I don't know the full details, but anyway, Southern Europe is the bigger part. But I find this sort of thing very frustrating. That unless opportunities are actually researched, looked at, and we just, you know, we send an odd deputation to South Africa or Indonesia or somewhere, or even Australia, as a jolly. That's unkind, I'm sure, but there doesn't seem to have been any fruit from the trees of these other places that we've tried. So,
okay.
Anyway, you're
right.
A busy man. I'll leave you in peace.
Thanks a lot, Byron. Thanks for your call today. Have a good weekend. And I just wonder if we are less connected to the Republic of Ireland than we used to, certainly in terms of aviation, certainly in terms of the steam packet. I wonder what your thoughts are regarding this. If you have friends or family, and perhaps even if you're listening now in the Republic, any thoughts on this? When was the last time, if you're in the Republic, you saw an advert for the Isle of Man steam packet? Adam's with us now. Is it Adam? No, it's Mark. Hi, Mark.
Hello, sir.
Yes, Mark.
Just, you were talking about copper and the broadband.
Yes.
I moved from Ballasalla, which was copper, to Peel, which is broadband, last April. And my phone worked absolutely fine. I think the problem is, if you get a power cut, you'll lose the phone because you've got to go through the router box. But your equipment will actually work.
Right.
So your phone will actually work. It's just that copper is a powered line, so if you lose power, the phone may still work. But the broadband has to go through your router box, and they give you a little adapter so that you don't have to use a broadband phone.
Right. So, I don't know. Do you know who owns all this, by the way?
No, not a clue, mate.
No,
I'm very sorry about that.
Me neither.
If I knew, I'm sure I could make money out of it, but I'm afraid I don't know.
Appreciate it, Mark. Thanks for calling today. Good to hear from you. Find My Bus app apparently is now working again after the problems with the app since last Saturday. I've signed up to fibre and was told it will be £6 a month more expensive, but when they came to survey the property, the existing cable wasn't in a duct. They said they'd have to put in a new ducting, £3,500. Wow. £3,500 as they're cutting me off. Do you think it will be free to reconnect for the phone line? And more messages. There's loads and loads regarding the vets bills and what have you, which I haven't had time to get to, but for the moment, Douglas City Council are promoting Douglas Beach Day in a sandcastle competition. How much sand are they importing from Peel or Port Erin so sandcastles can be made? Says Andy. Actually, we're out and about, by the way, this weekend. You can see Max Radio. We're at the Port Erin Beach Day tomorrow. Everybody's going to be there. The Port Erin Beach Festival gets underway this weekend. We'll be there from 9:30 tomorrow morning. Have fun. See the whole team there. Talking to Max Telecom, by the way, somebody sent me in a copy of their notice of annual inflationary price changes effective from the 1st of August. Have you seen it? The darn thing is 6 pages long. It must have 50 or 60 different tariffs on each page. It's a night's entertainment. Have you got one? Have you had fun with it? Alaman Bank and Manx Telecom aren't Manx. Our bigger shops are UK branches. What's happening to the Isle of Man, says Gaz? Well, at least we got the weather this weekend.
W-I-N.